Brooks Koepka may have taken a week off at the Open, but he showed up in full force at the WGC FedEx St. Jude Invitational. Welcome to the Flagstick.com Tee Talk Podcast. My name is Stefan Tiedorf. Scott McLeod, the associate publisher of Flagstick.com and PGA of Canada professional, is still in Prince Edward Island. Scotty, how's the weather down there?
The weather is great. Nice and cool, not like what you're suffering through there in Ontario, so I'll take it as long as I'm here for a few more days.
It's hot, it's humid, and the golf ball's rolling, making me look like I can hit a driver further than I actually can, so that makes me feel okay. Once I actually can find a fairway, hey, I talked about it last week, the driver yips, we got to come together.
Still bad.
They're better. They're better, but we can still come together. There's a place for all of us to meet and just, you know, be there for one of each other and be empathetic to one another, but it's not today. We got a lot of golf to talk. I noticed you, we just, as I mentioned off the top, we wrapped up the WGC FedEx St. Jude Invitational. Did I say June off the top? I probably did.
I don't think so. It all works.
Yeah, Jude. Either way, it is a great tournament because a lot of money goes to a great, great cause. And I know you actually watched the golf tournament over the weekend with your mother. How was that, Scotty? It was like you went back to the 80s sitting on the couch watching old tournaments.
Yeah, it was. It was fun. My mom was an avid golfer and played a lot of golf with my dad too. But it's kind of funny because she just gets frustrated. They don't play as much now, and she was basically yelling at Rory most of the time. You know, just get it together, Rory, basically, of, you know, doing stupid things, which, you know, she was just basically vocalizing probably what most people around the world were probably doing as they were watching the TV, too.
Yeah, it was unfortunate that Rory, it's hard to say he fell apart on Sunday. He shot 71. It's not that bad. He just wasn't able to back up that amazing 62 on Saturday. And I actually saw a great conversation on Twitter, and I want to bring it right into the podcast right now. Why is it so hard to follow up a great round of golf with another good round? It doesn't need to be great, but another good round of golf.
Well, I think it's probably, I think it's more mental than physical. I mean, it can be physical. Obviously, we change every day of what we're doing, and it doesn't take much to all of a sudden, you know, miss a few more putts. But I think the hard part is that, you know, you play that really good round where you're carefree and you're not thinking about it. And then, you know, you go the next day and all of a sudden you maybe are thinking about it. You're thinking, oh, maybe I should be able to just do this. And, you know, it's just a different mindset. And things just don't go automatically. Maybe there's expectations that you put on yourself as well. I mean, I've heard lots of people where they say, you know, I've had a career round, and they go out the next day and somehow they expect to beat it the next day with a career round. So I think a lot of it sometimes is more psychological than physical.
Golf really does bring out the delusionist in all of us. Is delusionist a word? If not, it should be, because I just made it up. Get that on a t-shirt too. But it really does just bring out, you know, our most interesting delusional self. We've all been there before, where one day we feel amazing, we shoot 85, and then the next day we had a late night, we're hungover, and we can barely make it to the first tee, we shoot 73. We've been talking about this a lot, about golf just being a game where nothing ever seems to make sense.
No, it really seems that way. And I think that's one of the great parts of the game, the fact that you can go and have that one shot or you know, one stroke that you hit that, you know, makes you just the same level as the best players in the world. But, you know, it's elusive. We think we can repeat that every single time, and then often we don't. But, you know, it's enough to make us come back and want to play again the next day in hopes of recreating that, right? Even if it is a happy accident.
Yeah, absolutely. One guy that could repeat it over and over this weekend was Brooks Koepka. Picks up his 7th PGA Tour win, 4 of those being majors. Actually, one of the weird things, and they really got to figure this out. I was on his Wikipedia page looking at this up, and it's like, oh, he has 5 European Tour wins. No, he has 4 majors that they also count as European Tour. It's figure this out, guys. Separate it, do something so it's a little bit easier. However, he won his 7th PGA Tour win Sunday. It may as well have been over on the 3rd or 4th hole. He just looked lights out. Rory clearly didn't have it. You knew Rory didn't have it when his wedges were looking like I was hitting them. that is not Rory McIlroy when he is on his game. His driver was lights out. He was bombing it past Brooks the entire front nine, which is just crazy. If you look at those two guys side by side, I've stood beside both of them on the range before. One guy looks like me, and one guy guy looks like a bodybuilder that's also an athlete that should hit it that far, and yet Rory's passing him all day, but Brooks just lights out the putter, lights out the wedges, and ultimately picked up that seventh PGA Tour win.
Yeah, the real separator there was the wedges and was the putter as well. I mean, once Rory missed that short putt on, I think it was three, the par five,
yep.
And then he sort of just went downhill from there. And I mean, you know, he just could not seem to carry any momentum. And once Brooks caught him and then sort of soared past him, and, you know, he just couldn't get any momentum. And, you know, a final round 65 is always going to be a great thing for a tournament. And, you know, this is a guy that a lot of people were freaking out that he was only, you know, 20 or 45 minutes before the final round that he showed up, and that he, you know, maybe he wasn't warmed up or whatever. But, you know, even Steve Elkington, I guess, tweeted a little bit earlier, said, you know, he got there minutes before he won the PGA Championship, and he won by seven that day. So people are freaking out over nothing. He's super, super talented, obviously. It was just weird because, you know, he went from looking like he could have cared less that he was in Northern Ireland to all of a sudden there he's in Memphis. And yes, it's a FedEx, it's a WGC event. I understand, you know, the biggest thing, as you said right off the top, is that it's, you know, really important as far as the charity is concerned. But yeah, it's hard to believe that, you know, he would put that much focus into it and enough to come up with his seventh PGA Tour win.
And one of the things too, I think that I've talked about this on this podcast before, Brooks Koepka, he didn't talk about it often, but this guy was extremely sick over the weekend, like an actual illness he was fighting. And that's a guy I always fear in sports, because it's the guy that literally he's just trying not to, you know, have snot on himself. He's trying not to cough while somebody else is putting. He's just not thinking, and that almost helps when you're playing golf. And as you mentioned, he did show up 45 minutes before his tee time, which isn't really unusual for him. I don't think this guy has a routine. It's just like, hey, do I feel good? I guess I'll go to the course now. I assume he showed up 45 minutes this time because he wanted to stay in bed as long as he possibly could. To the point where it's an hour before, no one knew where he was. Colt Nost, who's, did I say that right? Nost? I can't
Colt
say
Colt Nost.
Yeah. Sorry, Colt. You know, your last name makes no sense. Neither is mine. It's all good. Where he actually texted him, and this is something that's going to make Colt just an amazing broadcaster, being like, hey, are you coming today? And he responded, I'm on my way to the course. I'm already warmed up. So he must have just did a warm up in the gym, just trying to get away from the golf course while he's just fighting off whatever illness was inside of him.
Yeah, a lot of guys just, you know, stretch at home, stretch in their hotel room. They're ready to go. I mean, he's already played golf for a number of days in a row, so he's not too concerned now. And I think you're right. You mentioned about, you know, be wary of the sick person. That really goes back to what we're talking about with the 62-71. When a player sort of goes lights out, it's usually because they're not worried about the result. And, you know, they don't have high expectations. So, yeah, sometimes when you're not feeling well and you don't really think about it, and you basically expect to go out there and shoot a high number, it's really easy to shoot a much lower number. But I thought it was kind of funny, too. I mean, obviously, he wrapped up a couple things, the Wyndham Rewards and a couple other things. And
yeah, picked up like $5 million or something like that on Sunday. Not a big deal.
But it was just kind of odd because, you know, PGA Tour, when you look at some of their releases and things and they talk about it, and, you know, it's like there's a big quote in there about him winning the Wyndham Rewards, and it's from him. I'm like, oh, but to win the minimum rewards is incredible. And it's like, really? I mean, he's like, that's what you shoot for. I'm not sure that's what everybody's shooting for, but, you know, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, in most cases, I guess it's a big amount of money, but I know a lot of times, you know, if you ask players kind of where they're at and in certain pools and certain things, they don't really know. And I mean, it's hard enough to track for anyone. But yeah, it's just kind of funny. But yes, he did win a big chunk of money, not like he really needs it, but certainly he's cemented his place in the year as far as an incredible golf year.
Absolutely. I mean, we've all been there where, like, you're just so sick and you just want to get home to your bed and you're just saying anything. And he probably rewatched his interview later and was like, why did I say any of that? I was watching that interview live, and I was like, is he even there right now? Because I think he was like, oh, it's so exciting. This is what we play for. He may as well have said, I play for money at this point when I show up to any event that's not the majors, because that's why I was here. I didn't realize this wasn't a major. That's how sick I am this week. I thought there was five now, like the LPGA. That's Brooks Koepka shows up when the money matters, and, well, he made a lot of money this weekend, so good for him. It's always fun to watch them. I actually watched a lot of golf on the Sunday. When you see Brooks and Rory in the final group, I'm going to watch golf. However, I found myself turning it off pretty quickly, as that golf course was nothing in comparison to what we had last week. When you have a par five where guys are hitting five wood, and I think they had like a 6 iron, maybe a 7 yeah. iron in. Yeah, I'm sorry. That golf course was a joke. I saw a really funny tweet from one of the caddies out there talking about how the TPC golf courses are like the golf courses the Europeans choose when they have the Ryder Cup over there, just boring and easy for them to play, something along those lines. We're not going to out the guy. You can find him if you want to. But that golf course, just, hey, I get why they're there. It's a great opportunity for a great cause, but meh. That's all I got. Meh.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we've talked about it a little bit before. You know, TPCs are either affiliated with the PGA Tour or owned by the PGA Tour, so they're going to take them to all those events. They're going to take their events there, and that's just the way it is. It doesn't really make for the best venues from a playing aspect of it, and Memphis in late July is not really a big favorite for a lot of players, I'm sure, but with the purse the way it is, then they had to get there. But hey, they got one more week left in the regular season, and it's going to be a big week. I mean, the opposite field event as well, the Barracuda, that was probably interesting for some other people, just for the sake of, who was winning there and how that came out. Did you catch any of that as well?
Well, the thing about the Barracuda is, you're never going to get too much of it on TV with it being an opposite event. It was also rained out constantly throughout the weekend. I feel so bad for the guys that missed the cut and had to stick around till Saturday rather than getting out early. But the guy that won, Colin Morikawa, what a golf swing on this guy. We've talked about this guy before. He's 6 PGA Tour start. He picks up his first win. He's locked in his card for the next couple of years. And it was a cool format. That's what I like about this these different events. I would have loved to see more of it. How much of the Barracuda did you watch? And what do you think about this guy's golf swing?
I didn't watch much at all. I saw a few highlights. But Morikawa, unbelievable, especially with his iron play. I mean, this guy is awesome. And I think he's a great example for a lot of people to watch. And the fact that, his proximity to the hole, that's where he really stands out. I saw a quote, they were talking about some, some TrackMan stats that they're doing with him back when he was college. They were doing some equipment testing, and basically his pattern that he would, make with his 6 iron, his dispersion was closer to what a pitching wedge is for a lot of other players. So this is a guy who hits a really close, 4 of 5 holes, he birdies to win it. So he does it in spectacular fashion. Not only that, 3rd consecutive top 4 finish. My only question is it sustainable? Is he just a guy that's on a hot streak, got out there, he's playing well. As we talked about before, most players during a year will make their money in 6 or 7 weeks during a year. But, do you think this guy is going to be, winning PGA Tour events every single year? Or are we just predisposed to the fact that he's been playing hot to start his season?
Well, I mean, you could look at it and say, absolutely, recency bias is going to take over. Let me give you a couple stats, and I'm going to say why I actually think it's not sustainable. So I'm going to give you 6 stats here. Scoring average in his first 6 events. If this was across the PGA Tour, he's averaging 67.9. That would be first on the PGA Tour. Greens hit 74.1%. That'd be first on the PGA Tour. Birdies per round, 4.9. That would be first on the PGA Tour. Shots gained on his approach shots, that would be plus 1.42, first on the PGA Tour. Shots gained total, plus 2.29. That would be second on the PGA Tour. And then his one stat, which is just way off the board from those other ones, is shot gained putting, which would be 0.19, that is 0.19, which would be 100th on the PGA Tour. So he's not riding a hot putter by any stretch of the imagination. However, you asked if this is sustainable. No, you are not going to sustain 4 of the main big things that make you an amazing and a well-rounded player You're not going to sustain that across the year. If you were first in those four categories and second in strokes gained total, you're going to win like 12 tournaments a year. You're going to pick up a couple of majors. If he does that, I would be so surprised, and I will eat my hat. However, it's not going to happen. However, this golf swing is beautiful. As you talked about, this guy clearly just strikes his irons. He is a ball striker through and through. Is it sustainable? No, but no. I do believe we're not going to hear the end of this kid.
No, and it'll be fun. I mean, it's no different than Matt Wolf. I mean, you know, these two are that much closer to maybe getting a berth and, you know, some team events, World Cup coming up, or as far as international President's Cup coming up. Who knows? I mean, they're two players for the future of the game. They're two great players that have added a lot to the discussions. You're right. Probably not sustainable, but certainly going to be fun to watch, right?
Absolutely. Give a quick shout out to some fellow Canadians. Roger Sloan picked up T7 last week, brings him up to 91st in the FedEx Cup, which is awesome. Locks up his card, and hopefully he gets into one of the later playoff events if he gets a good stretch going. Just those are starting up. Not this week. You got to wait one more. It's starting up next week. And then another shout out to a fellow Canadian, Mike Weir. He has an exemption into the Wyndham. Now, you mentioned off air, Scotty, that this is causing a little bit of grief. Give me a quick breakdown of what's going on here.
Yeah, basically, I mean, there's some people wringing their hands over it, but it's, you know, it's the Twitterati. We'll call it that way. You know, a lot of them are people are saying, you know, this is the last event of the year. Maybe that Wyndham should be given the sponsors exemption to players that are kind of on the brink, that, you know, are close to keeping their cards or getting their cards. But, you know, my response to that is that, you know, it's really up to the sponsor who they want to have there and what they want to do with that. It's not their job to get those players, you know, to keep their cards. So obviously there's a connection there in some way. There's some sort of history, some sort of link. Maybe they're doing something with Mike, with a, you know, a sponsor or something like that. It's their choice who they're going to put into the field. And, you know, because it's Mike Weir, there's a whole bunch of people that are probably not familiar very much with Mike Weir's career, but they're sitting there, you know, on Twitter, basically going on about the fact that, you know, maybe he's not the best choice. But for me, I mean, that's their call.
Yeah, it's not our call, and I'm not going to argue. Having Mike in an event, obviously Mike's a national treasure to Canada. If we get his couple more starts and he gets a chance at getting his card full time, well, we're not gonna fight against it on this podcast. We're a Canadian podcast. We like Mike. Good, go out there. Why don't you just go out there and win it and shove it right down all their throats, Mike?
There you go.
Speaking of Canadians, we actually have a fellow Canadian on the podcast this week. We have Aaron Crawford, who is actually playing out on the Mackenzie Tour. Just today, we record this on Monday, he Monday qualified into the 1932 by something, something, something Open Championship out in the Mackenzie Tour in Edmonton. I apologize. We do talk about that on the interview. But Aaron's actually, as I mentioned, he's playing part-time on the Mackenzie Tour. He has very limited status. He is attempting to basically Monday qualify into every single event while also balancing the fact that he's trying to caddy part-time on the PGA Tour. He has looped multiple times for our good buddy, Martin Trainer, somebody I've also looped for. And we sat down with Aaron Crawford to discuss him getting into this event, his schedule, how he's made it this far in golf, and what it was like to turn pro at 18 years old. Scotty, could you actually imagine turning pro at 18 years old?
I can. It's a big choice for a lot of players to make, and certainly, you know, for him to step out and do that took probably a lot of courage to kind of do it. There's a lot to do with it. We're looking forward to hearing how he made that decision, why he made that decision, and what his career looks like now in mixing playing and caddying out on tour.
We'd like to welcome into the podcast Aaron Crawford. Aaron is currently playing on the Mackenzie Tour as well as doing some part-time looping out on the PGA Tour. Aaron, how's it going this week? Big week for you up in Edmonton, is that correct?
Yeah, no, it's been great so far. I just finished Monday qualifying.
Nice, yeah. So you Monday qualified into the tournament at the Mackenzie Tour event. For some reason, I actually don't have the name of that tournament in front of me. I'm sure you know it pretty well right now. What event are you in this week?
Oh, you're putting me on the spot. I think it's the 1932 Bateman Open.
There you go. So for the listeners, you don't have full-time status out on the McKenzie Tour. What type of status do you have? What does that actually look like for you week to week?
So my status is conditional status. So basically what it means is I get like the TPC perks and stuff like that. But I'm basically on like the waiting list to get into the events. So like my number, I mean, I'm pretty far away, so I'm probably like 100 spots out on getting into the field. But what it does allow you is it allows you easier access to get into the reshuffle after the first six events. So if you do well enough, basically if you just like have an okay finish, like make a cut, have an okay finish, then you get into the second half of the season. So the last six events of the McKenzie Tour season. I managed to Monday into two of them, and then I decided to go home early those weeks. So it didn't pan out as well for me, and that's why I'm stuck doing the Monday still. But that's kind of the life of a PGA Tour golfer.
That's true. It's not the easiest life. We're going to get all into that. Let's take a quick step back for a little bit. You grew up in Calgary, that is correct?
Yes.
How did you end up becoming a golfer and eventually taking the road down into professional golf?
Well, I grew up just kind of playing golf for fun, and obviously being in Canada, hockey was a big thing. So I played hockey in the winter and golf in the summer, and you know, I've always loved sports, and golf was just kind of that one sport that I just couldn't get enough of. And when it came to making a decision whether I go to school or turn pro or whatnot, I decided to take the pro route and, you know, try to play golf against the best in the world, and it's been a lot of fun.
And at what age were you did you actually turn pro at? It looks like you turned pro in 2012, probably pretty young, 18 years old. Does my math add up pretty correctly there?
Yeah, I think I was 18.
Okay. So how did that conversation go with your parents? I know obviously most parents want their son, their daughter to go to school. What did that conversation look like when you said, hey, I'm going to actually go pro instead of going to school and trying that route?
Well, so it's an interesting thing, because I think every other, you know, group of parents that I know would probably force their kid to go to school. And it was almost my mom and dad's idea for me to turn pro. Because I have always been told to do what I want to do. I mean, like that's kind of what it comes down to, right, is doing what you love. And I didn't love going to school. Like I really didn't have much interest in getting a degree, and I had a lot of interest in playing on the PGA. I mean, that's the dream, right? So they're all about doing what makes you happy, and that made me happy. So they're all for it.
That's awesome. I remember having a similar conversation in a different light, trying to make it as a musician and telling my parents I was dropping out of school to do it. And they always said, school will always be there. You know, your career and these options, they don't last forever. Was that kind of the same thought process with golf?
Yeah, very much so. You know, you're only 18 once, and I kind of looked at that as, while I wasn't going to school, I felt like I was getting basically a degree in golf in a way. Because I was at the golf course and working with a bunch of really good coaches and learning a lot of stuff. And I think it's starting to show, because, I feel like I know a lot more than a lot of guys that are turning pro that are about my age now, that are just finishing up school. So it's interesting to kind of see what they know and what they don't know. And I feel like I kind of have the upper hand now.
So what did those first years look like? You're 18, you turn pro. I assume you had some sort of backing to help you out. What did the first couple years of professional golf look like as a teenager? Which is crazy to think.
It is. Well, so I had a sponsor for the first 5 years of my pro career. It was just a company out of Calgary. They're backing my, you know, travel expenses, entry fees, that sort of stuff. So money really wasn't an issue for the first five anyways. And I mean, I turned pro, and I did pretty good as a junior. I won a lot of tournaments, and I didn't expect that to be any different when I turned pro. Obviously, you come competition a lot stiffer. I mean, if you shoot a 68 as a junior, you're right up there with the best of them. But if you shoot a 68 as a pro, it's just, you know, an average score, which is kind of sad to think, but that's just how good these guys are. So I turned pro. I went to Florida for my first year. I was playing out of Orlando doing what I think it's called the Swing Thought Tour now. I did their winter series, and I think that was 12 events, and I missed every cut. So it was, you know, it's a bit of a shock, right? Because I fully expected to turn pro, make Webb the next year or PGA Canada, and then be on the PGA in 2 or 3 years. And, you know, 7 years later, I'm still trying to get status or full status on the mini tours. And, you know, if you told me that's where I'd be when I first turned pro, I probably would have gone to school. But I'm very happy with where I am at now. And, you know, we're moving forward. We're getting better every year. And yeah, there you go.
What did some of those early conversations with your parents sound like when you're calling back? Obviously, they're your support system at that point. When you're 18, 19, you know, I can look back. That's 10 years ago for myself now. And my co-host, he's not here right now, but that's like 50 years ago for him. We always jab at him. He's a little bit older. But I remember those conversations and like just being almost in tears, you know, like, life's hard as an 18, 19 year old when you really don't know anything. And here's a guy out there trying to be a professional, has all these expectations of himself, and nothing's working out. Like, what did those conversations look like?
I think you already kind of nailed it. I mean, like, there was, I think it was after like maybe the fourth or fifth event down there. Like, I called him back and said, like, why am I doing this? Like, obviously, like, these guys are just so much better than me. Like I almost felt like, you know, trying to get the amateur status back, and you know, I mean, school was kind of out the window at that point. But yeah, I mean, it was kind of a, you know, kick in the groin. It was tough to kind of accept that, you know, how good these guys work. And I mean, because I didn't go to school, like most of these guys, I don't really have a backup plan. So, I really only had one option, and that was to go to the range and figure out how to hit a golf ball better. And I think that's what has made me as good as I am today, is I didn't have any other option.
I love that. There's an old saying, I believe it was Lee Trevino talking about, you know, you don't know pressure until you're betting with money that you don't actually have in your pocket. Is that kind of how you felt at that point?
Yeah, very much so. But I mean, it was kind of the opposite, because I had a sponsor, but mentally I hated playing with someone else's cash. Like, that just drove me nuts. So after the 5 years ran out, I've been doing it all on my own since. And you know, if you go and you play like crap, it just is what it is. It's not really an issue, right? Because it's on you, and you're the only one to blame, and it's your money. So you can, you know, handle that situation as best you can on your own. And that's kind of how I've always liked it.
Yeah, you're only answering to one person. Well, you did end up stumbling. I don't think stumbling is the right word, but let's use it for now, into a good wad of cash about last year. You ended up winning the major series of putting in Nevada, picking up a cold, hard $25,000 U.S. Not bad. I knew a couple fellow Canadians here. That's like, what, $300,000 Canadian with the conversion rate, if I'm pretty sure. How did that help you keep your career going over the last year?
It's kind of fueled it, actually. It's pretty funny. You know, you're kind of just looking for like that one or two good weeks that, you know, that produce the cash that you need to kind of move forward. And I mean, that was just something that I ran into almost by accident. I just went to the putting green in my the course I golf at in Phoenix every once in a while, and they had, you know, the major series of putting stuff set up, and it turned out to be, you know, one of the greatest things I've run into. And it turns out I'm pretty decent at putting. I just have to learn to do the rest of it. So those events are good for me.
Yeah, no, I mean, any event where you get to just kind of putt around and you walk away with $25,000 is not a bad event. What is the major series of putting? It's not something that's clearly well known and definitely doesn't really come around the small courses in Canada. I assume you had never heard of it prior to showing up to the golf course that day.
Right. So, well, they're still kind of getting started up. Last year was their second year. For anyone that hasn't checked it out yet or hasn't heard of it, I highly recommend checking it out. It is really cool stuff. They made a artificial turf stadium behind Planet Hollywood parking lot, like right behind the strip in Vegas. Like the first year it was awesome because you're putting under the lights at like 11 PM at night and you're in Vegas. Like, it's just such a cool experience, and meanwhile you're playing for thousands of dollars at the same time. So it's really cool. It's a great idea. I really hope it catches on, and it seems to be doing that. You know, like any business, it takes money to make money, so I think they're just on the way up, and I think they're onto something pretty cool.
It reminds me, do you remember, I don't know, you're a little bit younger than myself, but do you remember those videos from the 80s of those guys playing professional mini putt?
Oh, yeah, I watch them on YouTube all the time.
Oh, they pop up on Instagram and Twitter from time to time, and they're just, that's what I'm expecting. This sounds way cooler than the guys dressed like they are in the 80s. I mean, they were, but you know what I mean. It sounds super cool, and I mean, hey, it's helped you out for another year of your career at least. So what does the next year look like for you? Obviously have this week, and a win this week could change any sort of plans that you have right now. But what is the rest of the schedule for this year look like for you?
So my schedule going forward, I'm going to do, I think, the next three Canadian Tour events. So Edmonton, Calgary, Winnipeg.
Next one's pretty big, being in your hometown, eh?
Yes, they gave me a sponsor exemption and a membership at the golf course this year. So
that's awesome, man.
I get to light it up for them this year. It'll be fun. So I got those three, and then I think I'm just kind of waiting around for the MSOP to start up in kind of mid-October. And then every year I go down to Mexico and do the Mayakoba Classic qualifier, which is just a ton of fun. I love the golf course. It's at, I think, Ibero Star Paraiso Golf Club. Last year I came fifth, so there's four spots. So I got to redeem myself.
Nice. And between that, we mentioned off the top, you and I have a little bit in common. We've both looped for Martin Trainer out on the PGA Tour. You've done a couple events recently. How have you balanced that lifestyle going between, you know, flying out to try to Monday qualify, either ultimately getting in or not, and then flying somewhere wherever Martin's been and picking up the bag for the week?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a lot of fun. Whenever someone that plays on the PGA asks you to caddy, it's tough to turn it down, as I'm sure you know. And Martin's such a good guy. It's a lot of fun to do it. And as busy as my schedule is, I mean, it's worth it to be around the best in the world and learn whatever you can from them.
Yeah, what have you learned being out there? I mean, for me, just standing on the range was one of the coolest parts, and seeing how hard some of these guys grind or finishing the round and heading right back out to the practice tee and on the range and the green and just really working on finding that one thing. Is there something that you learn out there on those events that you've tried to bring into your practice routine?
Well, so it's actually interesting. Like, caddying for Martin, I actually learned something that I never thought I would have. Like, obviously, all these guys are very, like, technically sound. They all have great golf swings. You know, in the head, they're obviously pretty good because they play on the PGA Tour, and you got to be if you're playing for millions of dollars every week. But I learned that, like, these guys are stressed out. Like it's kind of interesting. Because in my mind, my goal has always been to play on the PGA Tour, and I've always kind of thought, like, once I get there, I'm going to be happy, right? Because you play for millions of dollars every week. It just sounds really cool saying it, right? But, I mean, it's a grind still. Like, just because these guys are the best in the world doesn't mean that, you know, their job's not stressful. You know, these guys are trying to keep their card, and, you know, some guys won, you know, 5, 6, 10 years ago, and they're trying to win again, and I guess the lesson I learned is to really just like enjoy life and like, you know, just don't get all that stressed out about things. Cause I feel like if I just enjoy life and, you know, see where I go and work hard, I feel like I'll have a step up on everybody.
And I agree. And I think you nailed it in terms, we talk about Martin way too much on this podcast. I mean, he's a great guy, but we got to stop giving him too much credit out here. But I think you nailed it. Like, this guy is, he seems carefree, one of the nicest guys in the world. But right now, he's probably going through one of the hardest slumps of his career with, I think 10 missed cuts in a row. And, you know, he's on the bubble for the FedEx. Like, that's a different stress. Even though he's locked his card up for the next 2 years, your goals are constantly changing once you get out into professional golf, whether, as you mentioned, your original goal, McKenzie Tour, and then from there, Webb, and then who knows, they're always changing. There's always stress, as you mentioned, and just learning how to manage that stress. Has he taught you anything on how to manage that stress?
Well, you know, Martin's just like, he's such a good guy, and like a conversation we were having at the John Deere this year, he had a bit of a run the second day to try to make the cut, and he ended up missing by a few. But I just remember saying to him, like, dude, you get the weekends off. Like, like that's kind of every person's dream, is it not? Like, everyone that works a Monday to Friday job doesn't want to go in on the weekends, and you don't have to. So like, I feel like golf's a lot of perspective, and if you look at it the right way, I don't think that there really is any pressure to make cuts or miss cuts. And again, he's playing against the best golfers in the world, so it's a pretty tall task to compete against these guys.
It really is, and it's also a sport, and we talked about this on our last episode, it's a sport unlike any other, and maybe I pitched it to Scott at the time, maybe you have any idea. We obviously both grew up playing hockey, I did some skateboarding growing up, things like that. Can you think of another sport where one day you have everything dialed in, you feel your swing, you know everything, you're chipping well, everything just feels right, and then the next day you feel like you can't do anything, right? Like Steph Curry doesn't go to the free throw line and not know how to throw the ball to the basket, where some days golf literally feels like you have no idea how to hit the ball.
I haven't yet to find a sport that's anywhere close to golf. I think tennis is probably the closest, since it's an individual sport and you're very, on your own, and, you it's kind of on you to make decisions and figure out how to do well, I guess.
Even that though, it's almost like a reaction sport. It's just, it's crazy. And we hope he's able to turn it around and make a big run at the FedEx Cup playoffs, but we're thinking of him, that's for sure. Going back to your game, you're currently working with your coach, I believe my co-host here is also a PGA professional, but he claims you're working with Todd Halpin, is that correct?
I am, yeah. I've been working with Todd for about 2.5 years now.
So what are you and Todd currently working on?
It's actually, it's kind of interesting. So I found Todd on Instagram of all places. Huh. And I started working with him cause I liked his golf swing. And I think in 2.5 years, we've maybe had 5 technique lessons. I started to learn stuff from him that I never really would have thought of in the first place. So Todd has a degree in sports psychology. So he's very good on the mental side of things, and just being a pro golfer and learning how to travel correctly and like learning how to get around a golf course and how to handle the ups and downs, he's unbelievable at. So honestly, we never really work on like one thing. Like, it's more just like he just has so much good information, and every day I take something new in from him, and so far it's working really well for me.
So what's the plan for the rest of the year? We have Q School coming up. I mean, as we talked about already, who knows, right? A win this week can change anything. You're obviously playing on your home course next week, so we'll be rooting for you there. If you don't win this week, I mean, why can't you win 2 weeks in a row, right? wouldn't hurt. What's the plan for the rest of the year? You do Q school? Are you planning on going to the Latino America tour, doing some more caddying? What do you see the rest of the year going forward?
Right. So my plans, I'll probably caddy a little bit more. You know, whenever Martin's kind of looking for a guy, I'll step in. But as far as Q school goes, I've always kind of found, I mean, it's 5-6 grand, whatever, without travel costs and all that. So, I've always believed that unless you feel like you can win on the PGA Tour, there's really no point in playing Web Q school in my mind, because I mean, you can go say, play good for a few weeks, get some status on Web or Korn Ferry Tour now.
Yeah.
Right. But then you're kind of stuck, you know, trying to fight for your Korn Ferry Tour status. And that's kind of the grind that I think everybody, you know, tries to stay away from in a way. So I want to make myself good enough to compete on the PGA Tour. And, I feel like until I feel like I'm fully ready to do that, I almost feel like it doesn't make sense to be putting, you know, 5-6 grand up to, give myself a mediocre shot of making it happen.
I like that. It is realistic, right? Like you're realizing, hey, I know I'm good. I have the potential to be good. Sometimes it's just the lucky break, but I want the confidence in myself that I know I can beat the guys out on the Korn Ferry Tour. I still don't like saying that, but I digress. Out on the Korn Ferry Tour and feeling like I'm ready to compete on the highest levels.
Yeah, I think they have a 10-year deal, so we got to get rid of it.
Yeah.
They have a 10-year deal, so we have to get used to saying that. no, I mean, that's how it is. And I mean, if you look at someone like a Kepka, who's winning nonstop right now, he truly believes that he's just better than everybody. And that's because at the moment he is.
It's true.
And even like Patrick Reed, he went on a little run there. I think he won 4 times in the same year. And he was saying he was a top 5 golfer in the world. And that's because he was. I think when it comes to golf, there's a lot of guys out here that think they have it and they don't. And I feel like they're almost just wasting time. And I want to make sure that I do have what it takes to compete. And then I'm going to go make the most of it and, you know, be a top golfer in the world. And that's the dream.
Speaking of Koepka, you mentioned the gym. You want to get stronger. What exercises are you focusing on so you can hopefully get more distance?
Well, like a lot of like explosive exercises. So a lot of, you know, a lot of jumping, a lot of throwing, twisting, a lot of core. And then a lot, I'm pretty skinny. So a lot of like compound exercises, you know, that work more than one body part at a time, just so you can build a little bit more muscle up. And a big thing for me is eating enough. You know, like today I played around, walked. It's probably, you know, 4,700 calorie day. So that's a big thing for me is just eating enough food.
Well, eating enough food, I mean, it's hard enough. Like you're grinding out there to make cuts and things. Like it's not like you have a dietitian on your side or anything, right? Like finding the right food when you're on the road is hard enough as it is, let alone finding food that's going to, you know, help you gain the proper weight in the proper places. So you can gain weight, it's just not going to be in the right spots.
Well, exactly. And I think I'm like anybody. I think you know, you do your best. And if you know, one day don't do your best, then you just got to kind of wash it off and go do your best the next day. And that's, you know, that's kind of life, is just trying to do your best every day. And whether you do it or not, it doesn't really matter. You know, it's in the past and you just got to go forward with the best expectations and see how it goes.
I love it. Well, we'll leave it at that, Aaron. Great luck this week at the, let me get this title right, the 1932 by Bateman Open in Edmonton, Alberta. And then next week, obviously, at your home course at County Hills Golf Club, and the Talon course, I believe, is where they're playing next week in Calgary, Alberta. And you know, as well. Good luck out on the bag with Martin. You know what? Actually, instead, why don't you just become a professional golfer so I can get more starts on the bag with him, where he gets really desperate. He calls in his fifth string caddy here. But thanks for coming on the podcast. We really appreciate it. Have a great week. We'll be rooting for you as the season goes along, and hopefully we'll see you next year out on the Corn Ferry Tour, our favorite name for the golf.
That's
tour.
Right. Yeah, cheers. Thanks for having me. It's appreciated.
Thank you, Aaron, for that awesome interview. Great luck this week as you hope to lock up your card for next year on the Mackenzie Tour and hopefully out on the Corn Ferry Tour. I mentioned at the end of the interview, I'd really like you to lock up your card so I can get a little bit more starts on the bag caddying out there on the PGA Tour for Martin. But also for
you. It's all about you. It's all about you. Just make sure. There you go.
So. I started a podcast. I clearly have some ego issues. So yeah, it is a little bit about me. A lot of other golf went on this weekend. Bernhard Langer, do we really need to talk about this guy? This guy just continues to win golf tournaments, another major out on the senior tour as he picked up the senior open championship. I did peek a little bit at that weather did not look good. That is the open championship I was expecting last week. It looked way worse. I saw Darren Clark out there just getting soaked in the rain, just looking miserable.
Royal Lytham at St. Anne's, though. I mean, fantastic golf course, so that was fun to watch.
Yes,
there were three Canadians did make the cut there: Dennis Hendershot and Dave Moreland, who had both Monday qualified or qualified. It's not necessarily a Monday qualifier, and Stephen Ames as well, but they weren't really in the mix there. I think Stephen might have squeezed his way into the top 30 or so. But yeah, it was fun to watch. Langer, yeah, fourth open senior open championship win. And I think that's 11 starts. So that's kind of crazy. But, you know, he's just as dominant on the Stay Shore Tour and the Senior Open Championship as he is on the Champions Tour. And no surprise there for him to get that win. That's for sure.
It's insane. This guy, it's insane. He quieted down for like, what, 6 months? And now he's just back. He's like, you know
more
what?
Like, more like 6 minutes, it felt like, really.
You know what? I'm just going to start winning again. I feel like winning again. Yeah. Nobody's talked about me for like 3 weeks. They're all just talking about Steve Stricker. Steve, move over. I'm taking over. This is my tournament.
Pretty much. That's pretty much it. That's
exactly.
Sure.
Also in major championship golf, the Evian Championship wrapped up. Jin Young Ko won her second major of the year. That's
crazy,
watch out. And they have another major this week, right? Like, that's a little weird. Back-to-back majors. We didn't even talk about that last week, I don't think.
Yeah, I just, you know, it is kind of a weird thing in the schedule where they get back-to-back majors. That's just the way it is. I mean, you know, there's always been a lot of discussion about the Evian Championship and how it sort of became a major. But I guess, you know, when a sponsor plunks down a whole bunch of cash, away you go. You know, a major championship is made. So it is what it is. It's, you know, they've got five majors, as we said, and Jin Young Ko's got a chance now to win a third major in a year, which has only been done by about a half dozen players, male or female, ever, to win three majors in a season. And, you know, if she managed to do that, she can put her name right up there with Ben Hogan, Tiger Woods, Babe Zaharias, Mickey Wright, Pat Bradley, and Inbee Park. And I mean, you're talking about somebody who was just a rookie of the year last year. So that's pretty incredible. She's having quite the year. And I mean, she's moved back to number one. She was number one before. On that same vein, Brooke Henderson has now moved up to seventh in the world. So she's working her way back up there. And, you know, the Women's British Open this week should be very interesting to see how that plays out.
I'm excited, though, at least. Again, another week of Lynx golf. I love Lynx golf. I'm going to be watching.
Well, they're not
this.
Exactly playing Lynx golf, but anyways.
Hey, well,
they're in the UK. How's
they're
that?
In there.
They're in Woburn, so.
It's going to rain. It's going to rain. It always rains. I mean, so I just want somebody in the rain looking miserable on a hard golf course, like a rock hard golf course. That's all I'm asking.
You just don't want 90 degrees, perfect temperatures, no wind.
Yeah, no, exactly. No. And I just think, you know, I want somebody to have to think their way around a golf course and pick up a win. So I am looking forward to watching that. Wrapping things up, weird transition. The season doesn't wrap up this year, Scott. It's like we're about to get
into
playoffs here. We have we have 1 week away from the playoffs, then we have 3 weeks of the playoffs, and then we just basically start all over again.
They're
up to 11 fall events. The Greenbrier is in there. The Houston Open's returned in there. I mean, I understand it for the guys that don't have the most status out there. This is probably they're like, okay, I need to lock up. I need to get out there. I need to play a lot of golf. This is my time to shine. But they also probably already did that all year and they want a break. I want a break. I thought this podcast was going to take a break. We're not taking a break. We're just going to turn right around and talk about the fall series right away.
Yeah, it's insane. I mean, the PGA Tour released their 2019-2020 schedule today here on Monday. 49 events on the schedule. Like you mentioned, 11 fall events, which really start September 9th at Greenbrier, which is insane when you think about that. So, I mean, we talked about wraparound season. This is getting crazy. And, I mean, as you said, sure, it might be great for the guys that, you know, don't have a lot of status or trying to get in to events. But my big question is, how much is too much? I mean, how much has this diluted the product as far as the PGA Tour? I mean, I used to get excited to, you know, when the PGA Tour would start in January after a couple month break. And, you know, you wanted to see the players out there. They had an opportunity to maybe go and test new equipment and, you know, do some training and come back or whatever. You know, you get a chance to maybe pay attention to the Q school. But this thing just keeps on trucking, man. It's just, like she said, it just doesn't stop.
It doesn't. And, I mean, we both get it. We've both been in the golf industry. Money runs this industry. Money runs every industry. Hey, if you don't believe that right now, I have oceanfront property in Saskatoon that I'm going to sell you. Money runs golf industry just like it runs every single industry out there. So we both get it. However, in an ideal world, I'm going to give you my ideal world, right? Everyone knows how contracts work on the PGA Tour. In January is where they reset, and you see guys out there with new equipment. It's my ideal world. The FedEx Cup playoffs end in August. We have a good break, let's say 2 months off. There's some fall events in December. Gets you pumped up. Guys are using it as a warm-up, and then they show up in January. Now they have their new equipment, and that's what we're talking about. It's almost like free agency in the NFL or the NHL, where it's like, where's this guy going? Where's this guy going? Open that stuff up. Let's talk about that a little bit more. Maybe I'm just an equipment nerd and nobody else would actually care about those things. But give us a break. Give us something different. Try some different tournaments. Maybe play a couple match play events in the fall series, not just the standard events. It was awesome seeing the Barracuda go into a Stableford event. Is there anything else? Can we do like an event where it's two guys doing alternate shot the whole event? Give me something different through these tournaments that makes me want to watch them, not just standard old tournaments. You know, we're going back to the Greenbrier. Whippy-doo.
Yeah, it's really difficult. I mean, I know at first they were going to be talking about, you know, hey, let's change the schedule so we can start avoiding, you know, football and stuff. Well, that's not even the case now. There's just a conflict with everything.
Now you're just playing with everything.
It just doesn't stop. But I mean, I just wonder when it gets to a point where it's like, you know, it's like anything. It's like a kid eating a bag of candy. I mean, after a while, you know, it seems like a great idea at the start, but after a while, it just, you know, it tastes the same and you just feel sick to your stomach. So, I mean, you know, what's going to go on with this? I know the PGA Tours, you know, they're really responsible for getting out there, making opportunities for their players. It's owned by the tour. You know, that's the responsibility. If a sponsor comes along and wants to put down some cash, you know, the Zozo, you know, if Zozo wants to come down and put in a cash to get a PGA Tour event in Japan, I guess they've got to go ahead and do that. But, you know, we end up here with this schedule that, you know, we've got alternate events now in November. I mean, we've got a WDC that's taking place in Shanghai. And at the same time, you know, we've got an opposite field event happening in Bermuda. I mean, it's just crazy. So, I mean, just look at that schedule and you just go, all right, when is anybody going to get a break here?
And then on top of that, they took spots away in these alternate events. It's like, guys,
right, exactly.
Like, so it's like, what are you trying to do? Are you trying to give the most opportunities to guys, or are you just trying to make money? And it's stupid. Like, if you're doing these alternate events, why are you cutting why are you cutting the product down anyway? Like, give as many opportunities as possible. We got guys out there where they're, you know, the guys that are in their 40s to 50s and they're in that weird range where they're not that great to play on the PGA Tour. They may have won a long time ago, but they're not yet available to go on the seniors tour. Those are the events that they want to get in because they actually might have a chance to make some money and hang around for the next 5 years before they can get out on the champions tour. It's just, I don't get the decisions that the PGA Tour is making right now. And it just seems all that matters right now when they're making these decisions is the dollar sign. And I think at the end of the day, what they're going to realize, similar to the rest of the golf, is that the people will go away, right? When golf got super expensive for a while, and I think that was, you know, when at the height of the era, people went away. Golf courses started closing. People are going to stop watching. I understand that sponsors pay for these events, and you know, if they have the money, then we'll run a golf tournament. But at the end of the day, if people aren't watching, are they going to be back next year?
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. They've got TV space. They've got TV contracts. They've got opportunities, I guess, in the international market with, you know, golf TV and various things this way. But as you said, just because they have those events doesn't mean they're going to have an audience for it. So just because you're televising, at some point, people are just going to turn off. And I mean, just as we've talked about this past week, I mean, you had a lot of golf that you're able to watch. So you end up talking about, you know, the Barracuda Championship. Well, you know, if there's no eyeballs on the Barracuda Championship, it starts to lose a lot of value for that sponsor. And you know, then it just doesn't become worth anything when the next round of contracts come around. So I just wish there'd be a little bit of a break. I love golf. I love to watch golf. But it might be a little bit much for the whole audience and what people are capable of actually watching or paying attention to.
I agree with you. Just give me something different is all I'm asking for. If we're going to put in that many events in the fall, give me something different. Give me a Canadian event in like December where like we're in like, we're in BC where it's cold. We can still play golf. It's cold. It's rainy. Give me something like that. I mean, I understand sponsors have to go for it, yada, 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 but give me something different that makes me want to watch these tournaments rather than feel I just have to watch these tournaments because it's golf's on TV. I mean, let's be honest. I think we avoid these tournaments when it gets to December, January, because it just makes us jealous up here. We're just freezing our butts off, and we're like, I don't even want to watch this because it's just going to make me upset. And now I'm looking at flights, and now my credit card's maxed out because I'm heading to Florida for 3 weeks.
You got to remember, too, not only are we having the 49 events over the year of the schedule, we also have Olympics next year. We've got that coming up. And then, of course, as I mentioned, the President's Cup is at Royal Melbourne in December as well. So those have to be worked into the schedule. So as a result, the PGA Tour has had to move around a number of things. So those are even more weeks that are there to watch. And, you know, when it starts to kind of bleed into each other, I mean, you know, even us as people that pay attention to the game, when you all of a sudden start confusing events, when you see, you know, sponsor of this or a sponsor of that, and it's almost seems like the same event, that's probably telling you that, you know, it's time that things have gotten a little bit weary.
I mean, like, for example, RBC sponsors like three events. Hey, we love RBC on this podcast. I'm not making fun of RBC. I want to clarify that they made the Canadian Open as amazing as possible, and they continue to grow the game in this country. But I agree with you, they kind of bleed into each other. It's getting a little bit confusing. I digress. I think we've probably lost half our listeners at this point. I'm talking about all these events. Why don't we end it on a really positive, fun note, Scott? You're posting on your Twitter, on your Instagram, that you were able to play down in PEI over the last week. You were able to get out with your daughter. Why don't you just talk about that experience and what playing with your daughter means to you?
Yeah, you know what? We come down you know, the goal when we come down here is to visit family. It's not really to play golf, but there's certainly opportunities to get out and play. And we do bring our clubs. My daughter's 13 now, And my wife will likes to play a little bit on occasion too. We went to a very fun golf course, a golf course that, you know, if anybody follows my Twitter, they'll note is not only a golf course, but is a campground as well. We'll give them a little shout out. It's called Belfast Highlands, and it's right next to the water, next to a place called Orwell Bay. Nine holes, super fun. My wife just kind of hits the tee shots occasionally, just picks up and goes for a walk. My daughter's getting a little bit more serious about it, but she, you know, she enjoys it, goes to golf camp, and then, you know, comes down here and wants to play a couple of times. And, you know, it's a special opportunity to be able to kind of walk fairways with her. You know, it's a sport that she's grown up around a lot.
And, whether she liked to or not.
Yeah, but, you know, it's something we can share. And I mean, really what happened, and really that ties into, you know, me being here and watching golf with my parents. I mean, I spent a lot of my teen years playing golf with my parents. They were both, you know, pretty active players. And it meant a lot of opportunities to be able to, you know, spend time with them. And you know that as well of you know, your parents as well from a golf perspective. But, you know, it's nice to be able to be on the golf course with her and just, you know, it's not about score. It's, you know, just about chatting and communication and just hanging out. And so it's nice to be able to do that. And in a low pressure environment as well. That golf course is pretty low key. And, you know, if you want to just go out there and bat it around in bare feet, you can. And I just love that as far as golf is concerned. I think it's $23 or something for nine holes, $10 or $11 for kids to play. Again, no pressure, lots of people out there just enjoying themselves and lots of families. And it's just a great way to play golf.
Yeah, it's very similar around this weekend as well. My wife and I went out to Westport, Ontario, and played Rideau Lakes, which is which is a little nine-hole course. Brooke Henderson sometimes will hang out there when she's out at in the area, and we had a great time. On the first tee, I said, "Hey, do you want to play for a drink at the bar?" I mean, it's going to come out of the same bank account. So, and my wife doesn't play that often, so I gave her 20 strokes. We were only playing nine holes, gave her 20 strokes, and she edged me with a bogey on the ninth hole to win. And I ended up having to buy her a nice Radler. And then we ended up having a nice dinner afterwards, at a resort that my mom used to own way back in the day called the Opinicon, which is just a beautiful place, cool. That you must go check out, in Chafee's Lock. Either way, it was a great day. And that's what I mean. When we're talking about golf, we can go out there with, you know, having those tournaments and play serious rounds. But this was just one of those, similar to what you had, one of those fun rounds where nice views of the lake, nice day, two of us in a golf cart, you know, phones away. And it was a lovely afternoon where, you know, you forget the world's around you. It doesn't matter how slow the game is. You can just talk about whatever. And that's another side of golf we don't often talk about. We can complain about the slow play. We can complain about the ball going too far. We can complain about all this. But at the end of the day, golf's supposed to be fun and just a good time spent with good people.
Yeah, I think we can maybe talk about that a little further in a podcast sometime. Maybe talk a little bit more about the simplicity of the game. I mean, we're always everybody gets caught up in things that are happening and these little minutiae of the golf game, and they get all worried about. And in the end, you know, the game is really about people and enjoying time with other people who also enjoy the game. And that's really the great part that attracts most of us to it. And a lot of the other stuff is fluff that we don't really need to worry about, right?
It's absolutely true. I think it's a great place to finish things off. Scotty, I hope you enjoy the rest of your vacation in PEI. Maybe we'll be together in studio again next week.
Maybe. Yeah.
We don't know. We don't know where the world's going to take us next week. But regardless, safe travels home. Everyone out there, I hope you're enjoying your summer of golf in Canada. If you're listening to this around the world, I hope you're enjoying your golf all year round, you know? Golf's supposed to be enjoyed. I know we enjoyed it this weekend. I hope that this podcast, our interview with Aaron, Scott and I's stories just about playing golf for fun and not worrying about it, inspires you to just go out there and have some fun this week, because it did allow both of us to remember why we started playing the game in the first place. Thank you for listening. Before we end the podcast, I need you to do one last thing. I need you to subscribe to the podcast. At this point, you probably already have, but just tell your friends, get them to subscribe. Post it on your Instagram story. I think that's what the kids are doing these days, Scotty. Google it. You'll find it. Post on your Instagram. Talk about it. If you know people that love golf, tell them about it. Actually, somebody came up to me at a wedding I was at a few weeks ago. My good buddy Danny just got married. They had just started the game. Obviously, I was like, hey, grab your phone, subscribe to this podcast. And then he was like, I'm going to. How many stars should I rate it? And Scotty, you know what I said to him?
5 stars only.
I said 5 stars only. This is a 5 stars only podcast. Thank you for listening, everybody. I hope you get out on the golf course this weekend. Have a great day. Into slow motion, and a day like today, my boat's lost in the ocean.